This is Money Markets and More, where we'll be talking about tweets that go horribly wrong.
This is Money Markets and More, money-saving tips from the savvy reporters at MarketWatch.com.
I'm Quentin Fautrell. This is Money Markets and More, and we're here with Priya Anand, who is taking over from Katie Hill today, who's Katie's on holidays. Hi, Priya.
Hey, Quentin. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So today we're going to talk about tweets. In particular, a tweet that the State Department put out on Wednesday saying that if you're not a 10 over here, then you aren't over there either. And this tweet was supposed to warn U.S. travelers overseas about scams, that they might be hit up by somebody in a bar. But apparently, it was only people who maybe feel attractive when they're overseas, which is, it's just, the tweet is bizarre. So we have Sally French wrote a story about this, a social media editor at MarketWatch, and also a writer who wrote a story about this. Hi, Sally.
Hey, Quentin. How are you?
I'm great. So tell us what happened.
So the State Department on Wednesday sent out a tweet saying, not a 10 in the U.S., then not a 10 overseas. Beware of being lured into buying expensive drinks or worse, being robbed with the hashtag spring breaking badly. I think the only people here who had the really bad spring break was the State Department themselves. They got all kinds of backlash for writing this. A lot of people saying this is unnecessarily sexist. And to make matters worse, the State Department for a while actually stood by that tweet saying, you know, it's not sexist because we made no mention of gender and this can happen to anyone. And a lot of people wrote back saying, you know, it doesn't matter the gender, just simply assigning a number rating to somebody being the government is a little sexist and objectifying.
Right.
And just to explain the joke, if you haven't caught on yet, it's the whole rating people, right? Like, are you a 10? And how people, you know, in middle school this used to happen. I'm sure everyone remembers. Like, you rate people based on their attractiveness scale of 1 to 10. To see the State Department making a joke about something like that, people thought was really sort of appalling.
So I love the responses that a lot of people sent back on Twitter. Someone said, if you're not a 10 in the U.S., you're probably not even an 8.5 in some parts of Scandinavia. BJ Novak actually wrote about, what about being hot in Cleveland? Is that real? So a lot of people had a lot of fun with it. But still, it's not good that the government is making these sort of rating claims of our people.
And the State Department did issue a sort of apology of sort.
They did. A few hours later, they said, some people have been offended by our earlier tweet, and we apologize that it came off negatively. And eventually, they did end up deleting that tweet. If you want to see it, it is still screenshotted on our site on MarketWatch.
Right. And that's the problem with tweets. When you send a tweet, there was the infamous a few years ago case of Justine Sacco, the public relations executive for Match.com, among other dating sites. And she wrote that tweet about AIDS and then got onto a plane for South Africa. And then the tweet went viral during her flight, and she was out of a job when she landed in South Africa. And that was, she said that the tweet was supposed to be satirical. It was about how white people don't get AIDS, apparently, in South Africa, which was clearly untrue and clearly a bizarre thing to say. But she said it was supposed to reference white privilege. And I don't know what, I think if it was supposed to be a satirical tweet, it was a bad satirical tweet. It was supposed to be meta. But that was just one of the more high profile instances of companies, or officials from companies sending tweets that have been
regrettable in some cases, right?
Yeah, very regrettable.
In this rush, and Sally's our social media editor too, and she also writes for MarketWatch. So she sees this all the time where people will, it seems like there's this like instant moment where people like want to be viral. They want to just say something that'll totally take off. And that's the business model that Twitter sort of thrives off of, right? Like people saying stuff that'll take off with like a huge crowd of people. But I mean, I guess Sally can tell us about how this goes horribly wrong in a lot of cases, where you just wonder, like, why is someone even sharing this thought that clearly is not very intelligent or doesn't even make them look good in some cases, like the case of the State Department or Martin Shkreli we saw, the famous biopharma executive who has in a lot of legal trouble.
For sure. We saw a lot of people, a lot of companies, a lot of politicians send out something that they intend to be a cute viral thing. And it's a cute viral thing for maybe a couple hours. And then people really turn it on its head. And then something that they intended to be a positive hashtag ends up becoming really negative. Even Hillary Clinton sent out a tweet saying, "How does your student loan debt make you feel? Tell us in 3 emojis or less." And, you know, it's something that maybe people they expected would send out a money emoji or a sad emoji, something like that. But, you know, those kinds of things backfire, too. A lot of people say, you know, you're reducing the entire student loan crisis to 3 emojis. That's not okay.
Especially when so many people struggle with money for years and years because they're battling those student loans and trying to pay them back, right?
Absolutely. Someone said the billions owed in student debts comes down to a conversation of emojis. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where just because it's social media doesn't necessarily need to be dumbed down. You know, people on social media are smart and they want to have a real conversation about, you know, student debt, something like that, about being safe while traveling abroad, about foreign policy issues. And you don't need to do it with a hashtag spring breaking badly or with, you know, a couple emojis.
Right. And I think the interesting parallel between the State Department and Hillary Clinton's tweet is the intersection between Twitter and what is cool and what they think young people might respond to, and these very serious government organizations, or in this case, a presidential candidate, as she is now. Tinder went on a bit of a Twitter rampage last year, if I recall, after a Vanity Fair article had alleged that a high percentage of Tinder users are married, or at least lie about their relationship status, and Tinder denied that. And I feel like Tinder did go in a crazy Twitter rampage, and it just kept tweeting tweet after tweet to Vanity Fair and the writer of that article saying there was one in particular that you mentioned in your piece, Sally. "Talk to our many users in China and North Korea who find a way to meet people on Tinder, even though Facebook is banned." So that also made people think, wow, people are using Tinder in North Korea. There's more in it for Tinder to take these kind of risks and go on a Tinder rampage than, say, a federal organization?
You know, Quentin, it's a good question. I mean, this certainly brought them attention. Tinder was on the forefront of everyone's mind that day after they saw Tinder's rampage. And so, you know, a lot of brands can really leverage that to kind of give themselves some personality when, you know, a politician already has their own personality. So it's really interesting when brands do this. Whether it's better or worse is hard to say. I think the moral of the story here is that things don't always come off the way they do in person as they do online. And so it's scary that politicians, that government agencies, and that companies are not being the smartest on Twitter or other forms of social media.
Right. And Twitter has cost people money. There was a case in Arkansas where a juror tweeted something about the case and the judge had to order a retrial. The estimated tag for that retrial was in the hundreds of thousands. The NBA has fined team owners for various tweets that went against their rules. Spirit Airlines did an ad blast for $9 fares a few years ago, and it got fined $50,000 because it broke Department of Transportation rules. So there have been a lot of cases where not only are you a pink slip away from is your tweet, you know, a might be your last tweet. You're one tweet away from being fired, from receiving that pink slip. But tweets can be costly, especially when it comes to organizations breaking rules or even defamation.
It's something scary that we have to be careful of. And usually if we're writing a tweet that we're worried about here on the MarketWatch side, we'll send it around to at least three different people and make sure, you know, people with diverse opinions based on age or gender, just to get the all clear and make sure that we're confident that a tweet that we think is a joke is just a joke and nothing more.
So is there pressure, Sally, to write tweets that are increasingly provocative and funny to get that traction on social media? Do you feel that pressure yourself as social media editor for MarketWatch?
Definitely. I mean, there's pressure to get, you know, the hundreds of retweets, and the more retweets you get, the better you're praised. Now, MarketWatch itself doesn't really have that culture of, you know, we understand the difference between just getting the news out there and maybe sacrificing that real clickbaity content. But still, I mean, overall, you want your tweet to get into the hands of as many people as possible, and often that means writing something a little edgier at the risk of causing a problem. So it's finding that balance and not causing that problem with the tweet.
I feel like it all circles back to the idea that sometimes people like to think the internet is just like this fun little thing they can play on, and what they do on there isn't really serious. But obviously we've seen time after time again that the internet is not just like this alternate reality that you can operate in, and there are consequences to what you do and say on there.
Right. And are not tweets enshrined in an archive being created by the Library of Congress? Public tweets are part of the permanent record. And even if you delete your tweet, and if it's a controversial tweet, somebody somewhere, it exists somewhere on the internet, and somebody will have screen grabbed it and retweeted it. So it's, once it's out of the bag, it's really hard to stop it, I think.
Especially for politicians. Yep. There are websites that actually track politicians' deleted tweets specifically to see, you know, what did this person in power say that they may be regretted 2 seconds later and deleted, so we can catch that because, you know, it is still part of the public record.
Nothing on the internet is private, and nothing on the internet is ever deleted, even if you hit the delete button.
Wow. So, Sally, finally, what are your – because people do want to get more Twitter followers. When you go for a job, I heard a story about two actresses that were up for a role, and the casting agent looked at their Twitter accounts, and he gave the job to the actress with the biggest amount of followers. So what would be your top three pieces of advice to people who are trying to get to either a person who's in a job and trying to get noticed or trying to increase their own, as you call it, personal brand, or even a social media editor in a company? What would be your pieces of advice?
Ooh, that's a good question, Quentin. My first would be definitely develop some sort of personality, maybe something that you're particularly interested in. So maybe you're the person who always posts, you know, news related to a certain subject, and you're always commenting on a certain subject. That's a really nice way for people, when they follow you, to say, you know, I'm interested in this subject, therefore you write about that subject and I want to follow you. By sort of distinguishing that, it makes it clear what they're getting when they follow you. I think the second thing is to really have fun with it and don't be dry. I mean, we talked about these cases where people tried to be so completely on the opposite direction that it became offensive. But you don't need to write these very stoic, bland posts either. Have fun with it. It's a social network, and you wanna be social and have fun with it. And finally, engage with those readers. Nobody wants to just be following an account where it just feels like it's a wall. So write back. If someone at replies you, you know, the very least, just give it a little favorite and, you know, indicate that you saw them at replying you. But always engaging with your followers is a great way for the followers to then retweet you more often and then share your brand with, you know, the other people they follow too.
Do you have like a golden rule for if you're wondering, like, do I tweet this? Do I not tweet this? Is it appropriate? Is it inappropriate? Do you have kind of like a rule for how you figure out whether or not to do that? Like, you know, if you're even thinking about it, maybe you shouldn't bother.
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, sometimes the tweets that I've been the most cautious about end up being the best. And so, you know, usually the common adage is, if you have a question about it, you just shouldn't do it. And often that really is the case. But I think there is something to be said about, you know, being edgy and being fun with it. And, you know, not offending people who you say are not tens, like the State Department did. But you can, you know, make jokes, and that's still okay. I would, of course, if I had a question about it, ask my coworkers, ask my friends, hey, do you think this is a good tweet? And get some opinion from some different people first.
Thanks, Sally, so much. I'll remember all of that the next time I go on a Twitter rampage.
I'm Priya Nan.
And I'm Quentin Fautrell. You've been listening to Money Markets and More. For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts, or become a subscriber in iTunes, Stitcher, and now Spotify. Please rate us, it helps, and follow us on Twitter at WSJ Podcasts.